Hello, welcome to the reading of the Sioux City Journal for Tuesday, June 14th. I'm Dagna, your reader today. We'll begin with a mini editorial which was written by Brad Strader of Storm Lake, and Brad writes, "I must admit that I was wrong about Joe Biden. A year ago, I thought he was pretending to be ignorant and incompetent about the major issues affecting Americas. Now I know he isn't pretending." Again, this was written by Brad Strader of Storm Lake. Our first article headline is, "Covering Their Bases, Sioux City Baseball Players Stay Cool During Severe Heat." Ice-cold Gatorade, wet towels, and watermelon were on hand for the Sioux City North High School Junior Varsity Baseball doubleheader against the Council Bluffs Thomas Jefferson Yellow Jackets. A heat advisory was in effect from 1 to 9 p.m. Monday. Despite strenuous activity being discouraged, the host Stars played the scheduled doubleheader. The first pitch was thrown at noon with a heat index of 101 degrees. "This is the first day we've had extreme heat," said North High freshman coach Sam Morganson. "There have been previous seasons where it's been hot or hotter, but today has been the hottest this season." In response to the high temperatures, Morganson did things a little differently to make sure the student athletes made it through the day safely. "On a normal day, we will have refreshments in the dugout, but the extra towels, ice coolers, and neck wraps, we hadn't used those yet," he said. Morganson emphasized player safety over all else. "Playing a game is not as important as our players' health. Making sure they're staying sharp, no slumped bodies. If we see that, we're going to make changes and allow those kids to sit out. If we had kids who were responding poorly to the conditions, we would have canceled." Between games, the teams retreated to the dugouts to cool off, have lunch, and drink fluids. The first pitch of Game 2 was thrown at roughly 1:45 p.m. The heat index at that time was 99 degrees. While everyone gathered at Bud Spiro Field felt the heat, two people felt it even more. Home plate umpire Ryan Jekyll and North High catcher Connor Schultz both had to don face masks, chest plates, and leg guards on top of their uniforms, making it feel even hotter. How did Jekyll get through it? "Staying hydrated and having a big strike zone," he said with a laugh. "I remind the players and coaches to get fluids in them, but I'm also having conversations with the catcher. He is the most important guy I got to take care of." Schultz, a rising sophomore at North, said he was fine after 8 innings behind the dish. "Talking to the umpire helps me focus on the game. It can get a little hot sometimes, but I've been taking some electrolyte gels and drinking a ton of water." Another catcher from the freshman team, Cortland Whitney, was brought up to relieve Schultz in the second game. "With the catcher having an extra layer of gear on and working every pitch behind the plate, we thought it would be the safe and right thing to do," Morganson said. "It's not worth risking their lives to be playing in conditions that they aren't feeling safe in." No matter the score, those who knew how to handle the heat were the real winners. Warm temperatures will continue Tuesday with an expected high of 92 degrees. Council amends city code to comply with state law on firework sales. The Sioux City Council voted unanimously Monday to amend the city code to comply with a new state law that limits cities and counties from restricting where fireworks are sold. On April 22nd, Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds signed SF 2285 into law. The bill prohibits local governing bodies from adopting or enforcing ordinances that restrict or prohibit the location of permanent buildings or temporary structures used to sell consumer fireworks in any location zoned for commercial or industrial purposes. In the last legislative session, the General Assembly provided that cities are not allowed to restrict firework sales in any area zoned commercial or industrial, City Attorney Stephen Postolka told the council before the vote. "Already, we had fireworks sales allowed in general commercial and business park. There's a few other zones in which fireworks sales would now be allowed, such as suburban commercial or general industrial. This amendment essentially just brings our own city code in line with state code." Resident Mark Solheim, who previously implored the council to restore peace in Sioux City's neighborhoods by adopting a total ban on fireworks, asked city staff to provide more specific information about the proposed changes to the fireworks section of the code. Postolka handed Solheim a copy of the amendment under consideration. The amendment strikes the following: "Any person engaged in consumer fireworks sales in any other zones other than general commercial or in business park in Fire Zone 3 shall not be approved for sales within the city limits. That language is replaced with consumer fireworks may only be sold in Fire Zone 3 and only in zoning districts defined as non-residential districts. The effect of it is to allow firework sales in a few more zones that they weren't previously, Postelko said. Previously, we banned firework sales in anywhere other than Fire Zone 3, and we're keeping that through here. The effect of that is that it keeps firework sales out of the downtown area, which is Fire Zone 1, and the near west side and sort of around the downtown area, which would be Fire Zone 2. But now, to sell fireworks, it has to be in an area that's commercial or industrial and not in Fire Zones 1 and 2. Solheim noted that the Fairway grocery store near Leeds seems like a residential area to him. He asked Postelko if it would be legal to sell fireworks there. Postelko responded, I'm not sure what the particular property is zoned. I'd have to look at the zoning map. Dan Moore asked if fireworks could be sold on the grocery store's property if it is zoned commercial. That is correct, and that is solely the choice of the legislature. We have no authority to do anything other than that, Postelko said. Solheim told the council that he understands that they have no other option but to amend the city code, but he called the new law a step backward for the state of Iowa. Fireworks are a danger to the life and safety of people in Iowa, and making them more readily available does no one any good, he said. Since Iowa lifted an 84-year ban on fireworks discharge in 2017, the sale of fireworks is allowed in permanent buildings from June 1st to July 8th, and in tents and other temporary structures from June 13th to July 8th. Numerous noise complaints in the days leading up to 2017's 4th of July led council members to vote in December of that year to shrink the legal fireworks discharge window from 10 days to 2. Under the city's current ordinance, fireworks may only be legally discharged from 1 to 11 p.m. on July 3rd and 4th and from 1 p.m. on December 31st until 12:30 a.m. on January 1st. In January 2021, in response to the complaints of pet owners, veterans, and numerous other residents, the council passed ordinance changes that added a municipal infraction penalty for property owners who permit fireworks violations to occur on their property. A first offense is $250, while a second offense is $500, and a third or subsequent offense is $1,000. Before the changes, only direct violators could be charged with simple misdemeanors. Illegal fireworks discharge carries a minimum $250 fine on private property and $500 on city property. Our next article is also from the council meeting, and the headline is Council Okays Redevelopment of Building on 5th Street. The Sioux City Council, by voting in favor of its consent agenda Monday, amended its urban renewal plan so that a developer can convert the long-vacant former Novelty Machine building into residential units and commercial space. The approved amendment also greenlights Lechner Lumber's construction of a new facility on the northeast corner of Floyd Boulevard and 4th Street. In order for the city to provide financial assistance for both projects, the council needed to approve the resolution adopting an amendment to the combined Central Sioux City CBD Urban Renewal Plan. The former Novelty Machine building, 901 5th Street, has been vacant for nearly 20 years. According to documents filed with the city, an unnamed local developer has the property under contract and intends to convert the building into 25,000 square feet of residential space consisting of 21 residential units and 5,000 square feet of commercial space. The developer plans to invest more than $3.3 million in the project. The documents state that city staff are working to finalize a development agreement, which would provide property tax rebates to the developer on the new incremental taxes created by the value added to the property for a period of up to 10 years. Financial assistance for the project from the city is estimated at approximately $750,000. Lechner Lumber, a full-service supplier of building materials for commercial and residential customers, plans to relocate its operations to the new facility at Floyd Boulevard and 4th Street. The company currently leases space at 200 South Court Street. The new location will include an office and two warehouse facilities with an entrance off 5th Street. The project represents a capital investment of $1.4 million. The company will retain all 9 employees, according to city documents. And we'll have a recap of the weather for the rest of the week. which is going to be a warm one, it looks like. So today will be breezy in the morning and hot in the afternoon with a high of 90 degrees. And tonight will be a low of 63 with a few late night showers. Wednesday is a possible morning thunderstorm, but it'll be mostly sunny during the day with a high of 84 and a low of 60. Thursday will be hot with plenty of sunshine with a high of 93 and a low of 62. Friday, it'll be very warm with plenty of sun with a high of 91 and a low of 65. And Saturday will be mostly sunny, breezy, and hot with a high of 96 and a low of 72. We now have some pictures that are with the heading of Climbing Wall Under New Management. And I'll read the captions from the pictures. Alex Irwin holds the belay line for Gabe Nash, a staffer of Long Lines Climbing, as he scales the climbing wall Monday in the Long Lines Family Rec Center in Sioux City. Whitewater, a recreation company based in Charlotte, North Carolina, recently took over operation of the climbing wall from Sioux City's Parks and Recreation Department, with a goal to increase the number of people who use the climbing wall. A grand opening was held for the climbing wall on Sunday. We now have a story about the school board meeting, and the headline is Verbal Sparring at School Board Meeting. A student representative to the school board spoke out on Monday condemning the actions of Board President Dan Greenwell and other school board members at a previous school board meeting. Greenwell and board member Monique Scarlett verbally clashed on May 9th regarding the decision to appoint former Sergeant Bluff Luton Superintendent Rod Erlingwine as the Sioux City Schools interim superintendent. Alicon Flory and Scarlett, who served as president and vice president respectively prior to Greenwell's election as president last November, claimed Erlingwine's selection for the position lacked transparency. In remarks at the May 9th school board meeting, Greenwell described Scarlett and Alicon Flory's claims as a false narrative, adding that each board member needs to take responsibility for their own lack of action or lack of intention instead of blaming others for the shortcomings. He also claimed the concerns were an intentional effort to be divisive or gain some type of attention without merit or substance. Dominic Eastman, a graduated senior from East High, has attended school board meetings throughout the year as a representative of the student council. He said when Greenwell was elected as board president, he had high hopes despite the representation Scarlett and Alicon Flory provided as women of color. Eastman said in the last year of school board meetings, he has witnessed bullying. He said the board needs new leadership and he and others are taking steps to petition for a leadership change. Dan, I sat here and I have watched you for the last year now, and I feel you are unfit for the title of president, Eastman said. During the May 9th meeting, Scarlett took issue with the tone of Greenwell's remarks at the public meeting. Stay professional. If you're president of this board, act accordingly, she told Greenwell. That's your opinion, madam, Greenwell responded. No, that's the facts and the tapes speak clear, Scarlett interrupted. It is not your time to speak. I am not finished. I didn't interrupt you, Greenwell said. But you always interrupted other board members, Scarlett responded. At one point, Greenwell slammed his gavel on the table, stopping Scarlett from speaking and responding to his comments, saying, you are not the president, madam. You have never respected a board member up here, Scarlett responded. Scarlett said she wouldn't be bullied by Greenwell. Eastman walked out of the meeting following the clash. He said he was seeing his own story of being harassed and bullied playing out in front of him. The past 8 years of my K-12 education has been filled with people who called me names and bullied me, he said. When I did speak out, I was told I was looking for attention and was literally told to stop looking for my 15 minutes of fame. Greenwell said at the previous meeting the two board members needs to take responsibility for their own lack of action or lack of attention instead of blaming others for their shortcomings or seeking attention, grabbing headlines, or 15 minutes of fame. Eastman read a section of the school board policies, stating board members' actions reflect on the district. He asked if Greenwell's actions were reflective of the district. Board members don't trust cabinet members. Cabinet members don't trust Greenwell. And board members don't trust each other, he said of the board meeting dynamics. Progress is not possible with this dynamic. On Monday, each of the board members spoke about the May 9th conflict. Greenwell said his actions were not the right way to handle the situation. "I will do better, I promise," he said. Alicorn Florey was not in attendance at the May 9th meeting and apologized to Scarlett for not being there to support her. She said the action of the board reflects on the professionals in the district, the students, families, and the community. Board member Bob Mickelson said the meeting reminded him of middle school and said if the board is fighting with each other, they can't be working for the children. Board member Jan George apologized for sitting and saying nothing and recommended the board use resources on hand to resolve issues instead of making disparaging remarks about each other. Board member Julie Albert was also not in attendance at the May 9th meeting, but suggested the board consider limiting board comments to 5 minutes each and setting the parameters for what is allowed to be discussed. South Sioux City RV dealers face more fraud charges. Dakota City. The owners of a South Sioux City RV sales company faced dozens of new charges as an investigation into alleged fraudulent sales practices continues. Douglas and Shara Braz, who operate Fremont RV Center, 2405 Cornhusker Drive, now face 44 and 50 charges respectively for alleged pattern of defrauding customers by selling their campers on consignment and not telling them, using sales proceeds to pay their own bills rather than the camper owners, and not issuing vehicle titles. A complaint filed Thursday in Dakota County Court contains 37 charges against Douglas Braz, 18 counts of theft by deception, 10 counts of selling or disposing of a motor vehicle without delivering a title or VIN number, 3 counts of knowing and intentional abuse of a senior adult, 2 counts of issuing a bad check, and single counts of conspiracy, theft by unlawful taking, aiding consumption of a felony, and second-degree forgery. He has yet to be arrested on those charges. An amended complaint filed Thursday against Shara Braz added 35 charges, 18 counts of theft by deception, 10 counts of selling or disposing of a motor vehicle without deliver a title or VIN number, 3 counts of each of knowing an intentional abuse of a senior adult and issuing a bad check, and 1 count of theft by unlawful taking. Shara Braz, 56, is scheduled for a preliminary hearing Tuesday. She was previously charged with 5 counts of theft by deception, 5 counts of selling or disposing of a motor vehicle without delivering a title or VIN number, 3 counts of violation of the Motor Vehicle Certificate of Title Act, and single counts of conspiracy and aiding consummation of a felony. Douglas Braz, 61, was bound over to district court last month to face 5 counts of theft by deception and single counts of conspiracy and aiding the consummation of a felony. He is scheduled to be arraigned on June 21st. The two, who live in rural Hinton, Iowa, were arrested in April and charged with selling at least 4 campers ranging in price from $12,000 to $18,500 on consignment. In each case, according to court documents, they did not pay the owner or the owner's bank and never informed the owners the campers had been sold. The owners did not learn of the sales until a police investigator contacted them. Fremont RV Center also failed to produce a title to the campers to the buyers, who were then unable to register and title the campers. An affidavit for arrest warrant filed Thursday said that since the Braz arrest, the South Sioux City Police Department has received more than 50 calls from other customers who say they were defrauded by Douglas and or Shara Braz. Callers were either buyers or sellers of more than a dozen campers or RVs who said they either did not receive a title, received a check for insufficient funds, or had not been told their RV had been sold. Some said they finally received their title or payment several weeks or months after the purchase was made. In some situations, customers did not receive payment or titles until after a lawyer or law enforcement became involved. Customers also reported paying Fremont RV for items that were never ordered and received. South Sioux City Police Investigator Joaquin Orduno said the investigation into the Braz business continues and more charges are possible. Rossi, Iowa man charged with sexual abuse. A Rossi man has been charged with having sexual contact with a girl approximately 6 years ago. The Clay County Sheriff's Office received a sexual abuse report in December that a girl who said that Stacy Boss had abused her in 2016 when she was under the age of 10. According to court documents, the girl was interviewed at the Mercy One Siouxland Child Advocacy Center in Sioux City and said that Boz would ask her to tickle him and point to his crotch. The girl said she would touch him His pants and underwear were around his ankles. The sheriff's office arrested Boss 56 on Friday on charges of second-degree sexual abuse, lascivious acts with a child, and indecent contact with a child. Sioux City police identify man slain on June 10th. The identity of the man who was killed in a downtown residence on June 10th has been identified. The Sioux City police say DeLorean N. Wade was located at a residence on the 500 block of 9th Street. He was transported to Mercy One Siouxland for treatment and later died. Katrina L. Barnes, 32, of Sioux City, was charged with second-degree murder and Wade's death. She was also charged with possession of a controlled substance and possession with intent to deliver a controlled substance. Investigators also charged Jordan R. Easton, 25, of Sioux City, with accessory after the fact and for concealing evidence related to the crime. Police say the investigation into this case is ongoing. Charlie Brown Christmas coming to the Orpheum. Just in time for the holiday season, the Peanuts Gang will be coming to the Orpheum Theater, 528 Pierce Street, on December 6th with a Charlie Brown Christmas live on stage. Produced by Gershwin Entertainment, A Charlie Brown Christmas Live on Stage is a fresh take on Charles M. Schulz's Emmy and Peabody Award-winning story. The live on stage adaptation of the classic animated special brings all of your favorite characters, as well as the unforgettable Vince Guaraldi musical score, to life. Tickets will go on sale at 10 a.m. Friday at OrpheumLive.com or at the Prime Bank box office at the Tyson Events Center. Nebraska Governor Ricketts nixes Connecticut fundraising appearance amid protests. Nebraska Governor Pete Ricketts, co-chairperson of the Republican Governors Association and a pro-gun rights and anti-abortion conservative, has canceled his planned appearance in Connecticut on Tuesday at a fundraising event for Republican gubernatorial candidate Bob Stefanowski. Liz Korontowicz, Stefanowski's senior advisor, said Monday that Ricketts had a scheduling conflict and cannot attend. The event, however, will still take place at a residence in Canton without Ricketts, she said. A message was left seeking comments with Ricketts' media spokesperson. An official schedule shows he has a news conference on Tuesday in Nebraska to discuss the opening of a state transportation operations center and out-of-state travel commitments for the rest of the week. Ricketts' planned appearance, first announced last month, has drawn criticism from state Democrats who labeled the Nebraska governor an extremist and questioned why Stefanowski would want to host a governor who said he wants his state to outlaw abortion if Roe v. Wade is overturned by the U.S. Supreme Court. The planned visit prompted local Democrats to organize a rally for choice and gun safety at a school that's near the fundraiser. Katie Kenney, chair of the Canton Democratic Town Committee, said Monday the group still plans to hold its rally, even though Ricketts won't be coming. I believe that they thought that they could play a double game, where they're saying that they're moderate on these issues, but simultaneously raising money off bringing someone who is basically red meat for their base and who would fire people up and get people to donate a lot to Stefanowski, she said. When they got caught, they backed out. Asked whether the planned protest had anything to do with Ricketts' cancellation, Korontowicz repeated her earlier brief statement about the governor having a scheduling conflict. As a Republican in Connecticut, a state more politically liberal, Stefanowski has taken nuanced positions on some hot-button social issues. For example, on abortion, Stefanowski said last month he would not attempt to change existing Connecticut law. The state codified Roe in state law in 1990. But thought the state should consider legislation that would impose a parental notification requirement for minors under age 16, except in cases of rape or incest. Endorsed by the National Rifle Association in 2018, when he last ran for governor, Stefanowski this month said he's committed to enforce the existing Connecticut gun laws, their strongest in the nation. But he noted, "I don't think we should be talking about a lot of changes right now until we enforce what we have." Grassley and Ernst take wait-and-see approach on guns. Chuck Grassley and Joni Ernst, Iowa's Republicans U.S. senators are waiting to see the final version of the bipartisan legislation containing modest gun control proposals before stating whether they will support it. The legislation was the result of 2 weeks of negotiations between a bipartisan group of U.S. senators in response to recent mass shootings in the United States. But Grassley, who is up for re-election this fall, said he was encouraged to see the bipartisan group produce a proposal. The proposal would make juvenile records available during background checks whenever someone under the age of 21 buys a gun, ban convicted domestic abusers from being able to buy a gun, and send federal funding to states enacting so-called red flag laws, which attempt to temporarily take guns away from individuals who could be considered potentially violent. I'm encouraged to see the bipartisan group of senators making headway on the important issues of mental health, school safety, and curtailing gun violence, Grassley said in a statement. As always, I need to see legislative text, which is yet to be written, before making a final decision on how I would vote, he said. I've said from the start that as we work toward improving safety, it's important that we safeguard rights enshrined in the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. EARN spokesman Brendan Conley echoed Grassley's wait-and-see approach. While this is currently only an outline of general and unspecific proposals, Senator Ernst will evaluate the specifics of any legislation when there is bill text to do so, Conley said in an email. Ernst, in the past, has opposed similar language, called the boyfriend loophole, to banning domestic abusers from being able to buy a gun. Ernst, who has said she was a victim of domestic violence, objected to a legislative proposal that would have retroactively classified assault convictions as felonies and barred those convicted from owning or buying guns. Simply disallowing people due process is not what we want to see, Ernst said in 2019. I think there are great ways to protect survivors in a way that doesn't strip away people's rights. The proposed legislation announced this past weekend does not reach as far on gun control as Democrats have called for, but many Democrats nonetheless praise the work done by the bipartisan group in an effort to achieve some action on gun regulations after decades of inaction amid dozens of mass shootings in schools, churches, and other public spaces. U.S. Senator Chris Murphy, Democrat from Connecticut, a member of the bipartisan group that put together the gun violence, said it represents real, meaningful progress and breaks a 30-year logjam, demonstrating that Democrats and Republicans can work together in a way that truly saves lives. Will this bill do everything we need to end our nation's gun violence epidemic? No, but it's real, meaningful progress, Murphy said in a social media post after the bipartisan deal was announced. There is not yet a timeline for when the legislation will be drafted and considered in the U.S. Senate. In his Monday response, Grassley also cited legislation he previously introduced, supported by its own bipartisan group of senators. The EAGLES Act, he said, would expand the U.S. Secret Service National Threat Assessment Center to include a greater focus on school violence prevention. We'll now move to the sports section, and our first one is a prep roundup for softball. Hinton Newell Fonda softball earned wins in scorching Monday heat. Wall Lake, Iowa. The Newell Fonda High School softball team picked up its 18th win of the season as it beat East Sac 16-0 on Monday night at the Wall Lake Softball Complex. The Mustangs scored in each of the first three innings, including eight during the third inning. The Mustangs collected seven hits in the win, including two from Kiera Youngers. Both of Youngers' hits were singles. Youngers also had five RBIs. Freshman right fielder Anna Mercer was 1-for-3 with 3 RBIs. Macy Severs had 2 RBIs. Youngers limited Isak to one hit in the three-inning game. She struck out 5 hitters among the 11 ladies she faced. Hinton 14, South O'Brien 2. Jaden Case struck out 9 batters in the circle. She picked up the win, giving up 5 hits and 2 walks. Emily Small was 3-for-4 with 2 doubles and 3 runs scored. Madison Guzman also had 3 hits, scored 3 times, and had 3 RBIs. With the win, the Blackhawks are 6-0 in conference play and 10-8 overall. MLC Floyd Valley 1, Sioux Center 0. The Dutch scored the game's lone run on Monday during the fourth inning. The Dutch had 4 hits. Alyssa Vorthman had 2 of those hits, which were both singles. Carlin Smith limited the Warriors to 1 hit. Smith had 69 pitches and she struck out 5. She did not walk anyone. Remsen St. Mary's 11, Hartley Melvin Sanborn 8-0. The Hawks collected their 11 runs on 7 hits on Monday. Octavia Gales and Maya Bunkers each had 2 hits. Bunkers had a triple while Gales hit a double. Marina Cronin allowed 1 hit to HMS. She also struck out 8 batters. Spencer 11, Weston Christian 0. The Tigers scored on Monday in each of the first four innings, including 5 in the third inning. And then for baseball, Remsen St. Mary's 15, Hartley Melvin Sanborn 0. Isaiah Garriott was 1 walk shy of pitching a perfect game Monday in the emphatic win over the Hawks. Garriott struck out 4 batters and needed 61 pitches to get through the 5 innings. 40 of those pitches were strikes. Garriott's, Jason Bunkers, Hunter Pick, Carter Shorg, Landon Waldschmidt all had double offensively. Alex Schroeder and Garriott's each had 2 RBIs. You are listening to the reading of the Sioux City Journal for Tuesday, June 14th on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. There are no obituaries in today's paper. And our next sports story has a title, headline, Tailgating Continues to Live On. Omaha. The party kept growing, as tailgates often do. It all started in 2007 when Mississippi State beat Clemson in the Super Regionals. The Maloneys were coming to Omaha. Paul Maloney and his wife Tracy used travel points to book flights and a rental car, then purchased tickets and a parking pass outside of Rosenblatt Stadium to see their Bulldogs in the College World Series. They had never tailgated before. After arriving late on a scalding day, the Maloneys found a spot at the bottom of a hill under the one shaded tree, next to the Gundersons. Maloney's brought only a styrofoam ice chest, while their new friends from Gretna had a grill, coolers, and chairs. The Gundersons invited them back the next day. "We got absolutely hooked, and so we have been every year since 2007," Maloney said. "I mean, we knew nothing about tailgating." That was evident when Maloney saw a group of Michigan fans outside their bus. The Wolverines weren't even in the College World Series. And Maloney asked one man why they were there. The fan immediately sensed Maloney's inexperience and replied, "You'll figure it out." For the past 15 years, Maloney has. In 2011, the Maloneys started renting a downtown Omaha storage unit for their tailgate equipment. By 2013, there were 30 members of their tailgate. Last year, Maloney adopted a bring-your-own policy with people bringing their own drinks, tents, and chairs. What we had in 2019, it really truly got too big. Though some logistics have changed, tradition remains. Maloney annually sees his regular CWS or College World Series tailgate family, which includes fans of other teams and friends from Iowa and Nebraska. They try for the same location in Lot D every year, raising a Mississippi State flag and being a goodwill ambassador for the program. The menu is also the same: duck poppers, pig wings, venison sausage balls, seafood boudin. The food was so good that one person suggested Maloney quit his job and sell duck poppers. Maloney has become pretty well known too, and he prioritizes serving food to law enforcement. One time, a security guard recognized Maloney's U-Haul as he waited to enter the lot. "Duck poppers here, be ready at 11," the guard said into his walkie-talkie. The Maloneys experienced the biggest evolution in CWS tailgating with the move to the downtown location. One of the major switches from Rosenblatt was that fans could not leave their setups overnight. "It creates a competitive feel," said Kellyanne Francis, who has tailgated at the event since 2000. Francis said there was a change in ambience. "At first, the parking lot looked like the Thanksgiving weekend sale at the mall," Maloney said. "There were mostly grassy area. There were more grassy areas, and you saw the same people at Rosenblatt. The RV community, known as Dingerville, showed up every year. There was the 8 Flamingo Tribute, too, representing the 8 teams. The self-proclaimed CWS professional tailgaters would hood each Flamingo as a team was eliminated. The Flamingos made their way to Schwab Field, too, where tailgating is on the surrounding concrete parking lots, and you'll find pockets of tailgating groups with cars packed in. It went from a neighborhood feel to a corporate feel," Francis said. Some like the change, though. Omaha resident Jake Williams has tailgated at the event since he was 6. He said, though it has a corporate feel, he prefers tailgating at Schwab's because of the downtown proximity. The 27-year-old tailgates with his childhood friends. His menu is much more traditional, too. Hot dogs, hamburgers, and Busch Light with a Spotify game day music miss. Rosenblatt, in terms of watching baseball and all the history behind it, it was a much better venue for baseball, William said. It was historic and it was old school, but it didn't allow itself to be really the party setup. Williams and his group have another tradition that carried over from the old park, cheering for anyone besides Texas. The Nebraska grad will cheer for Huskers first, then it's LSU or Mississippi State because of their fans. And Frances did find a way to keep that neighborhood feel. It starts with the people. Her tailgate consists of a core group coming from Texas, Colorado, Minnesota, and Kansas City. It creates a family reunion sense. She'll serve meatball subs on Father's Day because it's her Minnesota friend's favorite, and he can't stay the whole time. Boldin is a base breakfast staple. Other days it could be a taco bar, gourmet burgers, Cajun food, or barbecue. Frances, an LSU supporter, might have crawfish boils or jambala if the Tigers are in the field. Some other traditions. They will start with mimosas in the morning and partake in tailgate yoga while they're waiting to enter the lot, stretching their calves and doing other exercises. They'll arrive early to Lot D, like Maloney. Maloney's the king of Lot D, Frances says. They'll call me the queen and I'll call him the king. Preparation for Frances' tailgate begins in February with equipment checks. March is dedicated to menu and recipe testing. Then on Memorial Day weekend, she'll buy the beer. That's when it's on sale. A newer option is Blur Parties, a Nebraska-based company that hosts premier hospitality tailgates. When the CWS moved, the company introduced the concept to Omaha after doing tailgates for Husker football games. Buffet-style meals are prepared that consist of brats, hamburgers, and pizzas with a variety of sides. Fans have their choice of beer, liquor, or wine. There's a DJ, several flat-screen TVs, and games such as foosball and jumbo jenga. Guests can also visit the Chill Zone, a hot tub filled with iced water with a small deck. The location is outside the Hilton Omaha, and the company might expect to see 4,000 people during the tournament, Blur co-owner Stacy Leonard said. The location is near the stadium, but sometimes fans will just stay and watch games on TV. The same goes for Maloney's, Francis, and Williams tailgates. Maloney and Williams have a TV set up. And Maloney said there will be less stress this year. That happens when your team is not in it. His Bulldogs also won their first national title last year, so there's some consolation and plenty to eat. Sioux City Food Truck Fridays rolls into its seventh summer. In his blue and red food truck, Señor Tacos Josu Mazarangos always wants to please his diners. Some people want only carne asada in their burrito, while others prefer a mix of burrito, chorizo, pollo, you name it, he said in the immaculately clean kitchen of his lunch wagon. We don't mind it when you create an order to match your preference. Owning a food truck was a dream come true for Mazarangos, who entered the food industry as a barista. We opened Señor Taco last year, he explained. We started slow, but business picked up due to good word of mouth. This year, the family-owned food truck will schedule stops in the parking lots at Fleet Farm, Home Depot, Unity Point Sunnybrook Medical Plaza, as well as Sioux City's Food Truck Fridays. Mariango is hoping that Food Truck Fridays will bring him more exposure to his business. We are looking forward to being there every week. Now in its seventh season, Sioux City Food Truck Fridays has returned for the season. It will take place from 11 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. every Friday at Pearl Street Park at the corner of 7th and Pearl Street between now and August 26. Volunteer organizer Sam Burrish said the event has grown into a regional destination, which promotes food culture and entrepreneurship into the downtown district. In turn, it helps cultivate a thriving food scene in the tri-state region, he said. Food Truck Friday, sponsored by Downtown Partners, the City of Sioux City, and Seaboard Triumph Foods, has already gained a growing fan base with area gourmands. At first, I thought it would attract mostly downtown workers, Burrish said. Now it can bring in people from all around the city, or even out-of-towners who are surprised that Sioux City has so many food truck options. Burrish works hard to include returning favorites in the weekly roster of trucks while also recruiting a few new contenders. Smash is one of Food Truck Friday's most anticipated newcomers. Owned by veteran chef Clay Lilly and his wife Cherry, Smash specializes in smashed burgers, which is pretty much what you imagine it would be. Simply put, when ground meat hits a hot griddle, its proteins break down into smaller compounds. That causes it to become brown, charred, toasty, and yummy. When you smash burgers, they get flatter and will have more contact area to get tastier. And if you do it correctly, it will not lose any of its natural juices. It takes a different fat ratio of meat, but once you get the technique down, a smash burger is the best burger you will ever eat, Lily said. Indeed, the concept of smash burgers has been around for decades. Smash burgers used to be poor people food because you'd find them in diners or food carts that would spring up around factories, Lily explained. Given the fact that Lily has been in the executive chef at such fine dining establishments as Clyde's, the Key Club, and Degas on Broadway, he wanted to put a culinary twist on his dinnertime fave. For instance, Smash's onion burger consists of a smashed patty, 1/4 pound of onions, cheddar cheese, and a special aioli served on a brioche bun. However, Smash's unique offering isn't a smashed burger. Instead, it is Lily's take on a Vietnamese classic. The banh mi is served with pork belly, sriracha, and a cucumber slaw on a toasted hoagie roll. We're taking some very traditional Asian tastes and reinterpreting in a really delicious way, Lily said. Our customers rave about the banh mi. So, what are Senor Taco customers raving about? According to Elvira Mazarigos, it is the supersized breakfast burritos, the homemade sopes, and believe it or not, the keto tacos. If people are on a low-carb keto diet, they can still have their favorite food truck food, Elvira, who is married to owner Jose, said. The big difference is that we use a special cheese tortilla shell for our keto tacos, and they're very tasty. For those people who are not watching their figures, we heartily recommend the larger-than-life Senor Burrito, which is half burrito and half fajita. People will see the Senor Burrito and be intimidated by the size, Elvira admitted. But I've seen little girls order the Senor Burrito and finish the whole thing with no problem. When something tastes so good, you want to eat it all up, she said with a smile. And that certainly makes Jose Magarigos happy. When we opened Senor Taco, we wanted everyone to understand our Mexican history, culture, and passion, he explained. With our food truck, we get to share that with everybody in the community. And if you're interested in Food Truck Fridays, it's from 11 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. on Fridays, now through August 26th. And it's located at Pearl Street Park at 7th and Pearl Streets. And for more information on the menus every week, you can go to facebook.com/SiouxCityFoodTrucks. And now we'll move to a different story, and the headline is, Here's the Story Behind That Covered Wagon Crossing Nebraska. The phone rang last week at the Busy Bones Butcher Shop in Dar, midway between Lexington and Cozad. It was a stranger with a strange request. Any problem with us parking our covered wagon at your place and camping out there tonight? Kent Goodhart didn't hesitate. I said, nope, not at all. I told them to treat it like they own it. A little while later, a pair of mules pulling a wagon came clop, clop, clopping down the shoulder of U.S. 30. Joe and Marcine Blythe had been making Nebraska headlines since mid-May, but Guthard had no idea who they were or why the couple's slow-motion mission across the plains was so important to them. Now he's following along, keeping daily track of their progress. It's all kind of awesome to see, he said. It's neat to see people chase their dream. Joe Blythe's ancestors kept journals about their lives in Nauvoo, Illinois, among thousands of other Mormons, and about their exodus in 1837 when they followed Brigham Young to the valley of the Great Salt Lake. 40 of his relatives started the journey. Maybe 30 survived it and made it to Utah. In his home south of Salt Lake City, Blythe read their accounts and thought about their hardships. What they had to endure to escape religious persecution and what that meant for him 170 years later. Some of them died for what I enjoy, for me being in Utah, for religious freedom, stuff like that. I knew I could not help my ancestors out, but I could honor them. The idea hit him 5 years ago. He was going to retrace their journey, starting in Illinois and finishing in Utah, 175 years to the day after the original Latter-day Saints landed there. but he didn't have a wagon. He had never driven a team, and he didn't know what to expect once he hit the Mormon Trail. You can't just go ask your buddy, how many miles can you go in a day? How do I get hay? How do I get water? There's a lot that goes into it, and you're just guessing until you've done it. Still, he found an old Studebaker wagon running gear, the foundation for a wagon, and had the steel rims replaced with more forgiving rubber. He'd read that two of his ancestors could not afford to buy wagons, so they'd built their own. Blythe, an engineer whose company builds bridges around the West, spent 2 years of his spare time designing and assembling his own. He bought a pair of mules, Doc and Roxy, in Mississippi, and on his way home, stopped at a draft horse ranch in Colorado for a quick lesson in hitching up and handling a team. He since learned more from the animals. They're patient with me, and they taught me how to drive them. They made the first leg of their journey in September, 315 miles from Nauvoo to the Mormons' winter quarters in what is now the Florence neighborhood of Omaha. Thousands of Latter-day Saints spent the winter of 1873 and 1874 there, and hundreds died of scurvy, malaria, and cholera, and other ailments, including a half dozen of Blythe's relatives. They returned to Nebraska in mid-May for the 1,000-mile stretch to Salt Lake City. Blythe was happy to be back behind his team and on the wagon he named the Trail Dreamer. Last year when we stopped, I wanted to keep going. This year, we still have a lot of miles to go, but I'm anxious to get going. He feels closer to his ancestors now, following their path 175 years later. He knows they left tangible evidence, carving their names in Chimney Rock and Independence Rock in Wyoming. He knows he'll roll past the unmarked graves of relatives that did not make it. The journals he read only contained vague descriptions of where his people are buried, so many days' journey after crossing the Elkhorn, for example, or how long after passing Chimney Rock. He also knows he has it so much easier than his predecessors, despite not always knowing where they were going to camp that night. I don't have to worry about marauders or getting stampeded by buffalo herd or trying to cross a stream. And his ancestors didn't have the support he has. Some of it he planned. His longtime friend and co-worker, Brett Durand, saddles up as the outrider, staying ahead of the wagon and watching for trouble. Other friends are following in a pickup, pulling a horse trailer with feed and water. But much of it was a surprise. They did not expect so much attention and generosity, so many strangers offering to feed them, pulling over on the highway to give them bags of apples or drinks or donuts, or granting them safe places to camp and warm meals. They try to find rodeo grounds or city parks for their overnights, but they're often reliant on cold calls, sending their support vehicle ahead to find a friendly farm or business. Sometimes there's a knock on a door and they say, "We have a covered wagon coming. Can we spend the night on your property?" For the most part, they're excited for us to be there. Like Goodhart, the Busy Bones butcher, who sent the Blythes and their crew down the road with hardtack, smoked strings cheese, and bones for their dogs. Or the young farm family near the North Platte Airport, who insisted they park their wagon and horse trailer in their shed to keep dry, and who refueled them the next morning with a breakfast of venison steak, eggs, and juice. At first, we were mainly worried about logistics. Within about 2 days of our launch, this really came to be about meeting the people. Our next article is headlined, "An Idea Infusion. Drip Okoboji is Offering a New Way to Get Hydrated." Spirit Lake. After a day on the water or a long night of drinking and enjoying lake life, one can become quickly dehydrated. While a few bottles of water can help, Drip Okoboji is offering a new way to hydrate. Drip Okoboji is an IV infusion treatment center that offers hydration and vitamin infusions. IV hydration therapy is a minimally invasive treatment that can help you with a variety of issues such as dehydration, lack of energy, and food poisoning. Misty Doolin and Brenda Hassel are registered nurses with a combined 45 years of patient care. The pair founded Drip Okoboji after seeing similar businesses in Minneapolis and Nashville. Hassel said there was nothing in the area that offered the service, and the pair thought it could be a good addition for the summer season. "We thought maybe it would be a service that would be well received, so we decided to give it a shot," she said. "When someone drinks a bottle of water, his or her body only absorbs 50 to 60% of the hydration," Hassel said. "IV hydration allows for 100% absorption." Not only does Drip Okoboji offer a Hydration Drip. It also offers an athletic performance blend, immune boost infusion, brainstorm infusion, COVID long haulers blend, energy boost blend, food poisoning blend, hangover infusion, and more. There's a drip for everyone out there, Hassel said. Customers can book online or call, and one of the staff members will talk to them about what they're looking to get and what would be best for them. There are massage chairs and warm blankets to make it a relaxing experience, and the whole appointment takes about 45 minutes. For larger groups or more private locations, Hassel said they do home visits or hotel visits, and for groups of four or more, there's a 10% discount. We've done a lot of house parties for people in town for weddings, bachelorette parties, things like that, she said. Some of the concerns Hassel hears from first-time customers are whether or not they're getting too much of a vitamin, if it is going to hurt, and deciding which one is best for them. But Hassel said they talk through all their concerns with the customers. The pair opened Drip Okoboji in May of 2021 and had a successful first summer. Hassel said they are now more established and hope to see an even more successful summer this year. We'll now move to Dear Abby, our letter. Dear Abby, I was an alcoholic. I have been sober since 1994. I live with my elderly aunt, and I assist her while working in ministry. Her son lives with us and is basically a hopeless alcoholic. He drinks all day and lies on the couch. I know that if this continues, it will be fatal. We have tried to get him into two or three rehabs, and I can't count how many times he's been to the hospital for detox. After his last stint in rehab, he came back and was drinking again 3 days later. Because I don't know what else to do, I have committed myself to saying, well, if he wants to drink himself to death, there's nothing I can do. Am I doing the right thing, or is there something else I can try? I mean, it's not my house, so I can't throw him out. I don't even broach the subject with my aunt anymore. Signed, Conflicted in Illinois. Abby responds, congratulations for hanging on to your sobriety. I can only imagine the stress you're experiencing watching your cousin drink himself to death. If at all possible, it might be beneficial to you if you found other living arrangements while assisting your aunt. Your aunt, not you, as well-meaning as she may be, is her son's enabler. Her passivity is partly responsible for what's happening to her son, not you. You have done everything you can, and you cannot save him from himself. Your aunt may need counseling to help her break the unhealthy pattern that has been set with her son. Please suggest this to her. I hope she is receptive. Dear Abby, my friend has this habit of phoning me while she is walking her dog or driving somewhere. To put it bluntly, she calls when she is otherwise engaged and biding her time until she finishes the walk or reaches her destination. When she walks Gonzo, I have to contend with his barking, her admonishing Gonzo for pulling on the leash or the wind, which makes it difficult to hear her. When she's driving, the connection is often iffy. She has done this for years, but recently has started to seriously annoy me. I wish she would call when she's sitting in a quiet room and not preoccupied with something else. Is that too much to ask? How can I politely tell her this? Signed, Ticked Off in Texas. And Abby responds, it should not be too hard. Politely tell her you would prefer she not call while she's walking Gonzo or driving, particularly the latter because it's dangerous and you would hate to have her miss her exit or get into an accident because she was distracted. Then tell her you prefer talking with her when she's in a place that's safe to talk and she's not distracted. If she persists after that, ask when she'll be home, suggest you talk later, and hang up. And that does it for today's reading of the Sioux City Journal for Tuesday, June 14th. I'm your reader, Dagna. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. And thank you so much for listening. Thank you.
From the Bureau of Economic Geology, this is Earth Date. A decade ago, there were typically 20 earthquakes a year that were large enough to feel in the central and eastern U.S. But in 2015, there were over 1,000 of them. Why? It's mostly because we're pumping more water into the ground. The boom in U.S. oil and gas production over the last decade has brought many more oil wells, which also produce water. Most is naturally occurring in the formation, and some was injected by operators to allow or improve the recovery of oil and gas. In both cases, the water will likely have picked up salt and other minerals from the rock, making it many times saltier than seawater. Operators may re-inject this water to continue to liberate oil and gas. But more often, there's too much to handle. So it's trucked or piped to disposal wells, where it's pumped down into deep saltwater reservoirs. Adding large volumes of wastewater increases the pressure in these rock formations, which can allow natural faults to slip more easily than they normally would, causing earthquakes. To address these quakes, regulators and the petroleum industry are monitoring disposal wells and shutting down those that could cause damaging seismic activity. And they now think that managing wastewater injection more carefully should help. There's still more work to be done, and university research centers, like the Bureau of Economic Geology, are conducting major studies with the aim of minimizing the risk of earthquakes while maintaining the benefits of domestic energy production. For Earth Date, I'm Scott Tinker.
Earth Date is produced by the Bureau of Economic Geology at the University of Texas at Austin, with support from Schlumberger, helping oil and gas companies increase production and efficiency while lowering environmental impact. You can hear more Earth Date stories at earthdate.org.